1890s, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt addressed the nation through a series of radio broadcasts known as the Fireside Chats. His aim was to reassure the common man that our society would recover from its troubled times. But we're far from 1930, and I deal with a different kind of far. For a new era of worldly frustration, we offer a fresh conversation. I'm Greg Carlwood, and these are the Higher Side Chats.
How's it going, Higher Side Chatters? Drinking a little drink, smoking a little smoke. From sunny San Diego, I'm Greg Carlwood, hot off the heels of our 100th episode, one of my favorite projects I've ever worked on. Please keep showing that to your friends. I'm so proud of that one and everything, really. I mean, I am in a great place. The listeners are phenomenal. We are growing more every day. I say the only reason THC doesn't have a million listeners is because a million people haven't heard of us yet. But we are getting there, thanks to you guys and thanks to the amazing guests. Today is definitely one of those shows with knowledge that anyone and everyone should have and can benefit from, because we all hear these stories of websites selling our information, software companies creating government backdoors into the products we use on a daily basis, and we're seeing the beginnings of an era where a person like you or I is dragged through the courts or worse for an unsavory tweet, a controversial status, or an early copy of The Wolf of Wall Street. None of us are happy about this, but what can we do but shrug our shoulders and hope to just get by on being a small fish in a giant digital ocean? But how dependable is that? The shadowy elite and their worker bees are building better nets all the time. So why just sit there vulnerable and waiting for the inevitable day when the chickens come home to roost, when the tools exist to keep the government from knowing you have any business with chickens at all? Now, there's a reason you've only heard whispers of the deep web, but there's an entire parallel internet out there. Beneath the polished public surface where we find Facebook and Twitter, a darker place where even Google and Bing dare not tread, a place where staying anonymous reigns supreme in an infinite network of black markets, underground websites, and the information they don't want you to know about. And today we've got a man who's an expert in the deep web, internet cybersecurity, and counter-surveillance, and the covering of one's digital tracks. He goes by the name of Conrad Jaeger. He's the author of a book called Deep Web Secrecy and Security, which is really all I could find out about the guy, and that's how you know he's good. Conrad, my man, welcome to THC.
Hey, Greg, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it's a real pleasure. I think a lot of people have concerns with their online safety from some of those things I mentioned, but they also don't want to seem paranoid. But I guess let's start with identifying the problem. What are some of the areas where people on the surface web, they're just not being careful enough? Like, what are some of the ramifications of that?
Well, quite frankly, I think we should all be paranoid. We should be very, very scared indeed. Because, I mean, on one level, we've had a lot of publicity about the National Security Agency and Britain's GCHQ, you know, monitoring all of our emails, you know, getting inside our computers. We actually should worry about cyber criminals because, frankly, everybody on the planet who uses the internet is, frankly, a target. And there's a lot of things we can do. I mean, they're going to come at us primarily through our email. Within the last 10 minutes or so, I have various security products on my computer. It just went bing. Somebody sent me purportedly from my bank an email about updating my status with them, and that was a complete fake and phony. If I'd fallen for that one, they'd have easily planted spyware inside my machine. They would have found all my passwords and my bank details if I'd been so foolish as to leave them sort of in the clear inside the machine. So on that level, we should really worry about cyber criminals. And then it just moves on. There's so many people that have an interest in knowing what we're doing, you know, all the way from advertising agencies, people that collect data for, I know, presidential campaigns, you know, voting rights and all the rest of it. We need to concern ourselves on every single level. And frankly, everybody needs to wake up and really just tighten up the things they do on the internet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man, I read your book and I got several interesting little factoids from it. I mean, mainly it's that 1,600 people are added to the terrorist watch list daily, which is concerning. But even if you're not saying anything controversial online, just by visiting Twitter, there are 5,000 companies that have paid good money to be able to latch on and track you. And Facebook, it's over 8,000 companies that have access to you. And those are just the big ones. I mean, there's no signs that show that this kind of activity is going to slow in the future.
No, frankly, if anything, it will grow. You know, I mean, advertising aside, you know, people might wonder how websites like Twitter or whatever make money? Well, they make money by sharing, selling your information to all sorts of people. And we should really worry about that. On one level, it's really boring and inconvenient, you know, to be micro-targeted with advertising. But equally, you know, once they start knowing things about you, I know, it just gets out and about, and who knows what people will do with that information. Plus, we also know that the government piggybacks on this kind of data, particularly the data that's collected by mobile phone apps, smartphone apps.
Yeah, I know phones are getting to be more and more concerning because they don't have a lot of security, and yet they're being able to do more and more things. So they're becoming these little mini computers without much of the security, or at least it's just something that people aren't thinking about.
It's the fastest growing area for cyber criminals and also for intelligence agencies and law enforcement. Almost everybody now has got some kind of smart cell phone, and very few people actually bother to install the most basic security measures. I was at a conference last week and doing a class in cybersecurity, and I asked people to put their hands up how many people had just basic anti-spyware on their phones or even in their computers. So few people put their hands up. It's alarming. When you think that this stuff is free, you don't have to pay for it, and you're better off getting some of the free anti-spyware, there's no good reason not to be doing this.
Yeah, there's not. But in terms of cybersecurity, what are some of the most important practices that the layman should be introducing into their online repertoire?
Okay, well, one of the big things is called a drive-by download. You know, there you are, you're maybe on your phone, and you know, someone tweets you and says, "Oh, look, there's a really interesting story on this website here," and you follow that link, and maybe it's a spoofed website. And it contains a lot of, in the way that you visit almost any website, they will plant a cookie inside your computer.
Yeah.
Well, it's the same techniques that people use to plant spyware in your computer. So, you know, you'll be sent off to, you know, a phony website, and before you know it, your computer's infected. Equally, they've got smarter than that, and they can now put this spyware technology inside legitimate websites. So you might visit somewhere that's completely, you know, okay website, but through advertising and other means, they can then insert malware into your computer. This is called a watering hole attack. Now, how do we know about this? How do we know this is even happening to us when we're visiting a website? But there's various programs, simple little free apps that you can install in your browser, and I highly recommend you use Firefox. You install these, and it will alert you the instant somebody tries to plant anything in your computer. And again, it costs nothing.
Huh, interesting. So, man, how important is something like making a strong password? I hear all the time that passwords are weak from people who dabble in hacking, but what technique should people be putting into their passwords?
Okay, so what not to do is use any word you can find in a dictionary. Don't use any dates, memorable dates. Don't use your mother's maiden name, because if someone's that interested in you and you've got a Facebook page, they'll probably see your mother on there, figure out her maiden name, and incorporate that into their cracking techniques for your password. What do you do? Okay, this is really simple, and I'd love to teach this to people. If you can remember, say, the opening line of a poem, of a favorite book, or a pop song. If you can remember that, you can remember a password. I mean, I'll give you an example, okay? Very simple one. It's a lovely introduction to a book, Jane Austen's Pride and Prejudice, okay? And it begins with, "It is a truth universally acknowledged that a single man in possession of a good fortune must be in want of a wife." Now, anybody with half a brain could remember that. You might wonder why. But what you do is you take the initial word from the initial letter from every word in that opening paragraph, and that is your password. If you can remember that, you've now got a string of meaningless letters, right, that when they try and crack your password using a thing called brute force, when they run dictionaries up against your password, that will not trigger anything because it's a meaningless jumble of letters. Now, if I can remember that, which I easily can, that's the basis of my password. I'll put some upper and lowercase in it, maybe put a number in it or two, and maybe stick in a couple of smiley faces or something. That then becomes an unbreakable password.
Yeah, man, that actually is a pretty smart tip. I like that. I'm probably going to start using that.
Well, highly recommend it, and it's so important for you know for locking your phone or your laptop, particularly if you're using something like Gmail, Hotmail, any of these services. And I wouldn't really recommend you do, but you know lots of people do, and they won't stop necessarily. Don't give a simple password, something like that. You can easily remember it, and in a sense, I find it kind of fun that I know how to do this, that I can easily tap that into a keyboard. And it amuses me, and I know it will block most people, including the NSA.
Yeah. I mean, man, it is a weird world out there now. I mean, when I think about the way governments and the privileged corporations are using the what you call the surface web, the internet we all know, it's kind of exactly what they do in the real world. I mean, our leaders give us entertainment and shiny new electronic toys and finely tuned air conditioning in exchange for looking the other way when they invade a country or lock some people up in Guantanamo Bay. I mean, sure, it's bad, but we got a good thing going here. So we let them do kind of whatever they want. And the internet is kind of the same way. We allow the abuses to go on because we love Netflix and we love Facebook and we don't want that to get interrupted.
Yeah, and also, I don't think people take it seriously. You know, I mean, the often repeated line is, I have nothing to hide, therefore I have nothing to fear. Well, it doesn't even matter whether you've got to hide anything or not. We're looking at, if you take law enforcement intelligence agencies, you're dealing with people who are hyper-suspicious. You know, they can misconstrue anything, you know, from very simple activities. You know, let's say you watch a film about terrorism, I don't know, something like that, and you think, wow, you know, that's really interesting. I'd like to look a little bit deeper into the subject. You start looking into terrorism online, and hey, presto, suddenly you've come to the attention of the authorities, and before you know it, you might find yourself on an airline no-fly list. And suddenly all your contacts and friends are being followed too. Or conversely, one of your friends may research something. They might want to, I don't know, take up shooting and buy a rifle or something and buy some ammunition. So they're spending a lot of time looking at different weapons online. And then suddenly they become of interest. And then because they're of interest, they find their contacts book, they look in that, and then you're on their contacts book. You may have done nothing, but you're caught up in a web suddenly, and then bang, you know, you're potentially in trouble. And with their suspicious minds, you don't know what they're going to misconstrue from your life.
Mm-hmm. And I've also had guests that have talked about the fact that the FBI, you know, and their counterterrorism investigations, they're only really concerned with prosecutions or with charges. They're not really concerned with clearing your name. And a lot of people are actually getting caught up in these nets that really have no place being there. I mean, didn't we just see there was a kid a few years ago who was trying to make a creative way of saying he was going to party hard when he came to America, and he said he was going to destroy America. He ended up having his vacation ruined.
No, absolutely. It's a British guy. You know, he's using typical London slang. You know, instead of saying, I'm going to have a jolly good time, the slang is, I'm going to destroy America.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the FBI, no, the Department of Homeland Security were ready and waiting for him when he hit Los Angeles airport. You know, and the thing is, they knew everything about him, except what he was actually talking about.
Yeah, isn't that ironic? But man, it's bad out there, no question. So let's kind of dive into this thing called the deep web. I mean, that's really what is sexy and mysterious about this thing. I think that's what people want to know about. How would you describe the deep web to the uninitiated?
Okay, well, on the face of it, the deep web itself is actually rather dull, because what it is, it's all the areas of the internet that are not indexed by the search engines like Google. If you think Google, Yahoo, AltaVista, their job is to throw up the most popular results for people. If you look at the top, you know, the top questions asked of Google in any given week, it's celebrities and sporting events and all the rest of it. People don't want deep technical details. So Google only skim the surface, hence the term surface web, I guess. Things beneath the surface, I don't know, it might be really technical stuff. I don't know. It could be all sorts of things. They don't get caught up within the searches. So in a nutshell, if Google aren't looking at it, it's deep web. An example would be Google would tell you of the existence of a database or an archive somewhere, but it doesn't look inside that database or archive. So what's inside that is deep web. However, The thing about the deep web, it's huge. People really don't know how big it is. Maybe it's 5,000 times larger than the regular surface web.
Wow.
But within this deep web are an unknown number of hidden networks. And this is the area that is strange. You know, it's dangerous in some areas. You can easily run into arms dealers, drug dealers, slave traders, pedophiles, all manner of unpleasant people down there. Equally, there are people like journalists that will use deep web tools on hidden networks to communicate with whistleblowers and dissidents, aid agencies in repressive regimes who want to communicate with amongst themselves and with their base back in Washington or where have you, would use these tools that cannot be intercepted. Now, so the really core part of the deep web, which frankly is just a mass of information that most people are not interested in, the interesting part are the hidden networks. And one way you can look at this, you know, we've probably all seen the movie Raiders of the Lost Ark. Mm-hmm. Well, in the final scene of Raiders of the Lost Ark, they hide the Ark of the Covenant inside a crate, and then they hide the crate inside an enormous warehouse full of identical crates.
Yeah.
Now, you see, it's a matter of scale. But if you expand that, think of the deep web as a warehouse full of crates. But on a magnitude of, I don't know what, billions times larger than that, down in the uncharted depths of the internet, this is where people hide. And they can hide extremely effectively and do so.
Yeah, man, it's so interesting. It's kind of like Google keeps you on Main Street, but if you want to go down the alleys, then you need to get on the deep web.
Yeah, but I mean, all sorts of things that you might not, you know, might not be popular things to discuss. I don't know, anything. There are bulletin boards, there are chat rooms, there are all sorts of things down on these hidden networks, one of which is the Tor network. Perhaps we'll talk about that in a moment. And you can discuss anything and do it with complete anonymity in a way that you cannot discuss things with anonymity on the surface web.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, another thing I learned out of your book that was pretty fascinating was that, you know, there are considered to be 2 billion people using the surface web, but less than 500,000 are on the deep web, which sounds so crazy. Like 5,000 times more data, but fewer people than live in Denver, Colorado.
Absolutely. Very few people are using it. But I think more and more people are waking up to the possibilities of using a hidden network like Tor. It's called Tor, the Onion Router, that's what it stands for. Onion because it has a multi-layered encryption process. So I don't want to get too technical and boring here. But you know, the Onion Router was actually set up with funds by the US Navy at the start of the millennium as a secure means of communication amongst themselves. Now, the US government also have been putting money into this because they realize it helps human rights activists, free speech advocates around the world. And there's a kind of irony here. I'm sure it's going to, you know, register with most people listening now. But, you know, you can use these facilities and they're happy for people to use them and they will fund it. Now, partly funded. And as a result, as I say, journalists, aid workers, free speech people are using this all over the place. However, because it's so sharp, it's so clever, so hard to be tracked on the Tor network, that you will find money launderers and, you know, arms dealers and drugs dealers and all the rest of it. I think most self-respecting, serious criminals don't communicate, you know, using Facebook or Twitter or their email. They use deep web tools.
Right. And like for people who are trying to think of things they might have heard of, that's where the WikiLeaks full archive is, I think. That's also where, of course, I'm sure people have heard of Silk Road. Both of these websites or archives are located deep within the dark web, right?
Yeah, I mean, the Silk Road, which has been brought down and it's now come back again under a slightly different form, that's still running. A lot of the WikiLeaks material you will find on the so-called surface web. However, you will find things on the deep web, and it won't take you very long to find, you know, to find these places. You'll find you'll find sensitive documents before WikiLeaks even gets their hands on them. You know, in the book, I give various sort of like starting points, entry points into, you know, the Onion network, and one thing is called the Hidden Wiki. And it just lists all sorts of places where people will dump tons of information just because, you know, whistleblowers, they don't trust giving it to the press. They certainly don't trust going to whistleblower organizations. And they will upload an amazing amount of documents. Certainly from a journalist or anyone who's slightly interested in life generally, you can plow through some of this stuff and have your mind blown.
Right. Yeah, that's kind of what's most interesting to me. But let's tell people kind of how this works. Traditional internet, you know, you log on, you have an IP address. It's kind of tied to your computer, so you're fairly traceable. You leave a big footprint on the surface web. So you mentioned Tor, the Onion router. Like, what? Tell people what that is. Is that that's a client, right? You download that, and then what happens?
Okay, so what you simply do is you download the Tor Firefox browser. Free of charge. I do recommend in the book that you play around with the settings just a little bit, nothing complicated, take about a minute. And then suddenly you launch this browser and you can be 100% anonymous on the internet. Your internet service provider will perhaps know that you've entered the Tor network, but what you do subsequently, they can't see because you're down effectively a hidden tunnel, a secret tunnel. And then, you know, you may be sitting there in Seattle or somewhere accessing the internet, but to anyone watching you, when you pop up somewhere else to ask, say, Google a question, it may look like you're in Helsinki, Finland. They've got no concept of who you are or where you are. You are quite anonymous. And also, using this browser allows you to branch off deeper down into the Tor network itself, this particular hidden network, where you can visit all manner of weird bulletin boards, you can visit, you know, the latest incarnation of the Silk Road, and so on and so forth.
Right. And so what's off-putting for a lot of people is that there is no general search engine because nothing is indexed or monitored down there. So you got to kind of know an exact website, and you can't just put in like tickets.com. Well, it's .onion. Everything's .onion. But you can't just put in like tickets.onion or coolart.onion and hope to get lucky because all the web addresses are just kind of random letters and numbers, right?
Indeed they are. No, you can't do that. What you need to do, and again, keep, you know, mentioning the book, but in the book I do give various entry points. There's the hidden wiki, which lists all sorts of things. There's various directories that people have put together. These are user-edited directories. So if somebody finds something interesting, or let's say they start a chat group on a particular subject, they would then list that in one of these directories. So the thing to do is launch a Firefox browser, cut and paste in, say from the book or some other source, the address for the hidden wiki, and hey presto, you've got an entry point, and it will give you so many different places to go off and explore. And I thought, you know, the first day, you know, any of us listening here, you know, found the internet, you know, you imagine, you know, it was an amazing thing of discovery.
Yeah.
You know, you start looking at something, and before you know it, you're looking at something entirely different, and you're going on this amazing journey. It's like that, but stranger, much, much stranger.
That sounds so crazy. Can you give us some examples of the stuff you found down there that might kind of surprise people that they'd even have access to from their home computer?
Well, simple things. I mean, you can buy any kinds of identity. You could buy US passports, Canadian passports. You can you can have people send you documents. Let's say you want to, take out a new credit card. This is all the bad stuff, by the way. They will send you documents that say you're paying for various utilities at a particular address, which you're not. And the stuff looks so genuine, it will convince pretty much most banks to allow them to give you a credit card.
Oh, wow.
Equally, you can buy people's credit card details that people have stolen and go off and buy things if you're of that bent. You can buy firearms a lot cheaper than you can actually buy in the stores, which I found pretty shocking. There's drugs, there's weird sex stuff, and then there's activism, all manner of activism, just fantastic discussions going on about all manner of things.
Mm-hmm. Man, you know, when I was getting ready for this show, I watched a few video walkthroughs on YouTube, and they showed some pretty gnarly websites, man. There was one called Quick Kill, where you can hire from a network of anonymous assassins. They charge $20,000 for any normal civilian, which you need half up front, half when the job is complete. And if you want to kill a cop or a journalist, well, that'll cost you $100,000. And that was one of the crazier things I saw. And it's kind of funny because there's a lot of mystique and conspiracy around deaths like Michael Hastings or some of these high-level bankers, and people like me always want to get to an answer, but there it is, you know, Monsanto wants to kill a few journalists that are a PR problem. Well, $500,000, which is like nothing to them. I assume companies like Monsanto might even have a quick kill punch card. It's so crazy.
And I tell you, there's so many people advertising it, there must be something in there. You know, you can't take out an advertisement or have a listing in the you know, yellow or white pages. But my God, these people do list their services, and you know, you communicate with them using an encrypted thing. Generally, the people use a thing called PGP, which is pretty good privacy, and it's a means of completely encrypting your communications backwards and forwards. Anybody who was able to intercept just couldn't read what you were you know, writing or receiving. So that works very, very well. They would use the untraceable deep web currency, the Bitcoin. And pay for things that way. And there's no comeback. There's no way of tracing. You know, I'm not sitting here recommending anybody pop off a judge or a journalist or whoever. But, you know, in terms of, boy, is this interesting to look at? My God, it's fascinating. I mean, really, and you can destroy all sorts of people's lives. And for example, it's supposing, you know, you thought your partner was cheating. You go contact the Russian underground, and for a modest amount of money, they will hoodwink your partner into accepting, I don't know, an update for his or her phone, and they'll get inside the phone, and then you can turn on the webcam and watch them, see what they're up to. You can follow them around wherever they go using the GPS facility on the phone. They do it on the cheap because they also want access to, you know, that person's bank account details, and no doubt will go in and suck all the information out themselves too.
God.
If you want to bring down a website, let's say you have a beef against a particular company, for example, you can pay for a dedicated denial of service attack using the Russian underground, and it's only $100 a day, which strikes me as an amazing value.
Yeah, man, that is value. So, what if the president were to flip this almighty internet kill switch we hear about? Would that affect the deep web too? I mean, you have to have an internet service provider, right?
You need some means of accessing the internet. But, you know, I recommend people who are, you know, journalists and you know, secret bloggers and people like this who need real anonymity to keep themselves safe. I recommend you get a USB thumb drive and you install the Tor Firefox browser on that and a few other simple programs, all free. And then you can just go anywhere, slot that into any machine, PC or Mac, and you're going to leave no trace at all. You don't even need your own internet service provider. You can go to a cyber cafe or a public library, or you can just slip it into someone's computer when they're not even looking if you were that devious. And you can do anything you like, and there's no comeback. There's virtually no way they can find you.
Right. I mean, that was kind of one of my questions. Like, for somebody who just was curious and wanted to download Tor and just hop on there, maybe they adjust the settings to your suggested preferences, are they automatically safe? I mean, are they still kind of in danger? Like, couldn't they get in trouble just for accessing the deep web?
Yeah, in the States, I think they keep an eye out for people who are accessing Tor because they assume they're up to no good. There's a very simple way around that. You can use a virtual private network. Some are free, some you might want to pay for. And as soon as you connect to the internet, you're using their servers. Now, your internet service provider can tell that you're using the service, but once you're inside their service, they can't see what you're doing. So from that point onwards, then you access the Tor network, and they haven't got a clue that you're on Tor. Never say never. I wouldn't say anything is 100% secure or safe, and never trust any one thing 100%. I always recommend people use two or three different things at a time, mix and match different tools and techniques and technologies. By doing that, you are making it exceptionally difficult for anyone who's interested in knowing what you're doing, make it exceptionally difficult for them to find out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I've heard of VPN networks for people who use like BitTorrent or the Pirate Bay to download music and movies, which, you know, I have no problem with. My show is free. Why shouldn't every show be free? But I mean, it is fairly risky. People worry about getting a letter from their internet service provider or the Motion Picture Association of America. I mean, are there safer ways of pirating on the deep web?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, again, we come back to the question of what is the deep web? It's basically things that are not being indexed by Google, let's say. Well, there's the Usenet news groups. I'll say that again, Usenet news groups. Now, this predates the World Wide Web by about 10 years.
Wow.
And it's if you imagine a ginormous bulletin board on every conceivable subject, if you want to have porcupines as pets, or you're looking for jobs in aviation, or you're a fan of Jackie Chan, or any damn thing, there is a posting, there's a board down there devoted to that one subject. Now, if you wanted to download the latest blockbuster movies in Blu-ray and not be monitored, have no one know you're doing it, you just go to the relevant bulletin board down there, and people are uploading films and you can just download them. Nice. And it goes to everything, books, music, world music, anything you can think of, someone has kindly uploaded it to share.
I mean, that's pretty awesome. For people who might not have seen it, I mean, they're not big on aesthetics down there. It's not very graphics heavy, is it?
No, it's not at all. It's very sort of, you know, primitive, as it were. But there's some wonderful, you know, a news group readers now. So you put your cursor over, I don't know, let's say you're interested in particular types of dogs or something. You know, you put your cursor over posting a particular type of dog, you don't know what it is, a little thumbnail image of that dog will come up. So, you know, it's there, you can see things. You just learn to operate slightly differently. And also, too, you know, if you think you're not going to be interested in something, you just download the first part of it, watch the first 10 minutes, see that it's fine, and then download the rest of it, and you join them all together with a particular program that, again, I list in the book, and easy to find out. Anyone who, you know, looks into this will learn this stuff within 10-15 minutes. It is really, really basic, but also it doesn't slow things down. Yeah, and you can download a movie in like 10 minutes or something. You've got a reasonable connection.
Wow.
You know, take you 2 hours to watch it, but you download it in 10 minutes. And, you know, and just discovering things, you know, I have an interest in world music, you know, music from Mali or where have you, you know, mm-hmm. And just generally, I don't find this stuff, you know, just on the regular internet. But I can visit a world music, you know, element of the news groups. And there's people who are saying, oh, look, you're interested in this. I recommend that. And before you know it, you've made lots of friends. They've introduced you to music. You're introducing them to music. Famous like the regular internet, just works slightly differently. And it's just a marvelous way of sharing files.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, it sounds great. Of course, there are a lot of really dark and evil things down there. But, I mean, what do you think if someone needed an organ but was having a hard time getting on a donor's list, do you think they could find help on the deep web?
Yeah, for sure they could on tour. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I hate to even guess at this, but they'd probably get one to order.
Oh, man. I mean, that actually brings up another interesting dark corner of the deep web that was on one of these walkthrough videos I saw, other than the various forums where people are asking scary things like how to make chloroform and looking for kidnapping techniques, which is a little uncouth. They also pulled up a site for an organization that has 4 warehouses at an undisclosed location available for unregulated human study. You can pay to have like dark experiments done on real people, which you don't know where they get them, but they'll run tests and publicly post the lab results.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a highly dubious, suspicious nature, so I wonder if sometimes people are having, you know, putting my leg or having a bit of a joke there. I'm not entirely sure that these things happen, but I guess if you can think of it, someone somewhere is doing it, and if there's money to be made, they're certainly doing it.
Yeah, I mean, it's wild, but obviously Pandora's box is open to any extreme. I guess to get into some of the more positives, like, I try to find ways for the little guy to get ahead in this backwards world. And of course, everyone knows now that people who were early adopters and entrepreneurs on the surface web were able to make millions and billions of dollars by getting there first. But is there any opportunity in that same sense with getting into the deep web, or is it just like a different kind of animal?
I don't know. I mean, this again, we're down to human nature here. You know, someone will always find a way and a means of making money out of the strange and the unusual. And for sure there are. You know, the blatantly obvious ones are the illegal ones. You know, but there must be all manner of services that people can provide, you know, slightly grey areas or what have you.
Well, there was Bitcoin. I mean, who knows how valuable it will become, but that was a golden ticket for a lot of people who were using it 2 years ago.
Oh, it still is. I mean, when it first came out a few years back, you know, a Bitcoin was, you know, it cost you 20 cents. I think you look more recently than me. How much is it now, you know, for one from Bitcoin?
Right now it's hovering around $600 usually.
I mean, that's shocking. If you had just bought $100 back then, you would be so wealthy now.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, who knows where Bitcoin's going to go? I think it has an enormous future. It shouldn't just be seen as some kind of investment. You know, I didn't get in on the ground floor. I maybe got in on the mezzanine, as it were. And you know, my minor investment is now worth quite a bit. But I'm not seeing it in terms of as a financial investment. I'm looking at ways and thinking of ways that it's going to be used in the future. You know, we all get bombarded with junk email, for example. Mm-hmm. Now, someone's coming up with a notion whereby to receive, you know, if somebody sends me an email, right, they have to pay me a microscopic portion of a Bitcoin. Bitcoins are infinitely divisible, which means, you know, you can have 0.0000001 of a Bitcoin. Now, it's going to cost nobody, you know, anyone who wants to send me an email, it's going to cost them nothing. However, if you're sending out a million spam emails a day, it's going to add up. So you could, in theory, entirely defeat spam email by using the Bitcoin.
Right. Yeah. It's very versatile, and it's so efficient. I mean, but people should realize, I mean, we know that central banking and control over people's currency is really the trump card of the elite. You know, that's how they keep us under their thumb. They control the mechanism in which we do all business, but Bitcoin operates outside of that, and that alone is tremendous value.
Well, it is indeed. It doesn't cost us anything. You know, if you use your Visa card or PayPal or whatever, it's going to cost you to do that. Using a Bitcoin won't cost you a single cent. And also, it's immediate. You know, as fast as an email can be sent and received, it's that fast. It's an excellent way of paying for things. And sooner or later, people will come up with the right apps to use on your smart cell phone that will allow you to, you know, make immediate purchases. You'll be walking past a billboard for something. You like the look of this concert coming up. You point your phone at it. You've made your payment with Bitcoins. Bang, hey presto, no one's had to, you know, take a percentage off for you. If you're trying to buy things online, how many times does it go wrong? It goes wrong a lot. If we were using Bitcoin and people devise, and they will do, devise good payment systems, I just see it as a marvelous way ahead. Instantaneous, no middleman. And also, you know, there's an awful lot of people, for example, you know, government agencies monitor all financial transactions. You know, maybe you just don't want them to know what you're spending your money on. You know, it doesn't have to be something dodgy, something illegal. You just want to keep the things to yourself.
Right. Yeah, man, it's interesting stuff. Of course, a lot of people have fears because when you do keep that power yourself, you do have a lot of responsibility not to lose it. We consider banks to be generally secure because they'll hold our funds and we don't have to really do much about it. But, you know, we've all seen runs on the bank and times when they just don't have the money. So it's good 99% of the time. But, you know, for my money, I'd rather just control it myself. You know, I trust myself more than I trust anyone else.
No, absolutely. I don't trust anyone, least of all bankers. No, I think it's a great way of doing that. You know, and you have a secure wallet online, but you will print out your code, your unique, you know, identifier for the amount of Bitcoins you've got, your Bit wallet. You can store that in a physical safe somewhere. So if your computer went down or anything like that, you know, you've always got access to it. And if you're going to put these things on your computer, don't put it in a folder called Bitcoin. You know? give it a really fundamental, boring name that no one's ever going to look at. You know, give it the name of an appalling sounding recipe, anything, and people won't necessarily look inside that. And then you can encrypt anything anyway within your computer. Very, very simple. There's lots of free programs to simple encryption. So you can keep these things very, very safe.
Yeah, definitely better safe than sorry. So in terms of the deep web and the access to it, is Tor like the main thing? Are there other equivalents to Tor?
There's Freenet, for example. I haven't spent a lot of time exploring that, but it works on a very similar principle. there's, I mean, just basic person-to-person, you know, file-sharing facilities. I mean, that technically is deep web. The whole nature, I guess, of hidden networks is that they are hidden.
Right.
And, you know, maybe you need an invitation to use them. Certainly in countries like...
digital secret societies.
Well, yeah, or you know, you're an activist in Iran and you just don't want the state to know what you're up to. You know, people are using hidden networks purely for the, you know, in the Persian language.
Mm-hmm. And are there, I've heard there's like social networks too that are like clones of typical websites, like an anonymous version of Facebook, things like that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's complete Twitter clones, there's Facebook clones. And in the same reason, the same way that you might use Facebook to, I don't know, share files with people, share images, you know, you, it doesn't always have to explain who you are. You know, and I think many people are foolish. They put far too much information up on Facebook or what have you. But you can use the facilities for sharing, for group chatting, for doing all sorts of things. And you know, this is where the deep web comes into its own, and the Tor network particularly. You know, we can have totally secure chats using just, you know, just the basic chat programs that you would use ordinarily on your regular internet. There's deep web versions. You know, you can send SMS text messages that simply cannot be intercepted or read. There's email systems down there that you can use that connect with the regular internet, and they just can't intercept them. You know, Right. Let's say you're using Gmail and the government's interested. Well, how many times did Google get asked by the various government departments to hand over information? You can use companies that are based in Switzerland and Iceland that are operating down on the Tor network. You know, they're not going to take into consideration, you know, court orders from the United States or Canada or Britain. So that keeps you particularly safe. And also, if it's in employing a form of encryption, end-to-end encryption, they're not being intercepted in cyberspace because, you know, organizations like the NSA, for example, that they're scouring the internet looking for keywords.
Right.
And these keywords will not come up because they're scrambled.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I was thinking about. Like, that's what really interests me the most is the idea of combing through leaked documents and sensitive material that the government probably has web bots searching for and taking down anytime they appear on the surface web. But they might just be laying down there waiting to be exposed.
Yeah, and if you wanted to actually put up your own website that can't be taken down, there's no better place to do it than Tor. And there's very, very simple ways of doing it. You know, there's file stores down there. So you can store any amount of data, you know, anything you want, you can store down there. You can lock it in a box. You can have it there. Anybody can read it. Well, if you can use something like Photoshop, you can actually design a page and load it up there as a JPEG image. And there's your website. Bang, you've done that in 10 minutes. You know, it's not interactive, but you maybe don't need it to be. If you want that, there's file hosting services down there too.
Yeah, and a lot of people are talking now in terms of the surface web that they're really concerned about is this net neutrality stuff. And I assume that would have no effect on the deep web.
Absolutely not at all. You know, here's the thing. You know, that, you know, with net neutrality, what we're going to be seeing is, you know, people, the internet service providers are going to be giving you immediate access to services that they have a financial interest in, and those that they don't have a financial interest in, they're going to throttle back or actually block totally themselves. Mm-hmm. Right now, which means we're going to be looking at a kind of corralled internet, you know, a very limited internet. But by using a virtual private network, right, you're bypassing all of that because you're using somebody else's servers in another country. You know, so that stuff does not get blocked, does not get throttled back, and the same with using Tor. You cannot limit it. And I think more and more people are waking up to this, you know, and more often than not, commercial organizations are looking to make us to pay for services that until now have been free. And I think this is the joy of the internet, the ability to share things and all the rest of it. And if those things are being closed off, you're going to be forcing people underground. You're going to make people use Tor and virtual private networks. And in the end, people are going to find it's much better for them.
Yeah, man, I find it fascinating. I mean, even just, it doesn't take that much to learn about it. I mean, I thought it was kind of a daunting task, just like I thought Bitcoin was a daunting task two years ago, and now I'm kicking myself. But I've already found all these little cool tips and tricks and things in your book. I mean, even with our communication, you've sent me a few messages that have self-destructed, man. That's cool.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I find these things really funny. And, you know, let's say you're having a protest about something, anything, could be anything. Maybe, you know, someone's driving a toll road through your village or something. And every time you complain, you know, the police or private security guards are there to break up any kind of protest or demonstration. Well, you can use these marvelous little tools, right, to send information to people. One of my favorites is a thing called Spam Mimic. Now, you know, everyone gets all this junk email and it's, oh, hello, sir. You know, we offer you financial incentive programs, you know, you recommend to us. And it's all kind of broken, rubbish English. Well, that stuff is not being picked up by the NSA because it just, you know, it's just, there's so much of it. Well, you can actually compose a message that actually looks like this junk email. When you receive this junk email, you put it back through a little device that online, and it will decode it. And it will say, you know, meet at 4 o'clock on the village green or whatever. And but to any outsider, it's complete junk and they won't even be looking at it. And these tools are remarkable. We could all use these for different things. I think they're great. Mm-hmm. And they're free.
And we already know there's plenty of evidence to suggest it on websites like Facebook and Twitter and even Reddit, which is considered to be fairly open. People are censoring posts. Moderators are pulling content, on all hosts of subjects. But when people talk about fracking or GMOs or just general rebellion and corruption exposing, a lot of those things get pulled. And, you know, it's going that direction. So the more time you spend on those networks, you're going to have to realize that the things you see have passed through the middleman. And if you want to get rid of that middleman, you got to do something different.
Absolutely. And more we're going to see examples where, you know, these services like Reddit or whatever will be seen as publishers. And people will be able to say, in the same way that a newspaper publishes something that's libelous, that the newspaper are the people that can be taken to court and sued. So I think people are going to use that route to start blocking, you know, debates about fracking, what have you. And that will happen more and more. And I think because of that, people will bypass those services and they will use bulletin boards down in the deep web, down on the Tor network, where no one is doing any monitoring. Yeah?
It's cool, man. I mean, being well-versed in this stuff, are there any tips you have for the typical internet users on the surface web or any little things you'd like to see people doing that would offer them potential safety that we haven't mentioned?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's some very, very basic things. I mean, first and foremost, I would change the way we browse. You know, I would, you know, dump, say, Microsoft Explorer, for example, which I don't think is safe. I would use, you know, the Firefox, Mozilla Firefox browser. It's free. It's great. It's really fast. There's a whole bunch of add-ons, free add-ons that boost your security. So when you visit a site that's trying to plant a cookie in your computer, it will tell you. If someone's got a bead on you trying to follow you around, it will tell you. If you're visiting a website that's perhaps got malicious content, it will warn you before you get there. So for starters, I would use Mozilla Firefox. In the book, I give you a list of all the free things you can download and add on to Mozilla Firefox. That will make your browsing really, really safe. In terms of your email, I think we need to wake up a little bit and you know, when somebody sends you an email and I don't know, I'll give you an example. A little while ago, I had an email from my friend Phil, seemingly, from his Gmail account. And it said, hey, comrade, found this amazing picture of you. Now, first off, Phil's not the kind of guy who would have lots of amazing pictures of me. secondly, he's a news cameraman. As far as I know, he's in Syria. So I'm sure he had better things to do than look at anybody's photos. Now, what had happened was a hacker had just got into his Gmail account, had got into his Gmail contacts list, and they were pretending to be Phil, and they were sending out all these what looked like photographs, and you open them, and suddenly you have activated the most amazing spyware that has got inside your system. So we have to think very long and hard about what we're receiving. You know, if you are in any way suspicious, you should already have free anti-spyware, and there's no reason why you shouldn't. And I give you a list of really good ones. And then all you do is use those to examine the attachment, and it will tell you if there's anything malicious in there. So we should just need to be more suspicious. You know, earlier today I was saying I got something purportedly from my bank, and it wasn't from my bank. It was complete rubbish. And again, if I'd accepted that, or I'd accepted an update on my smartphone. All these ways people get into your system. So, for example, don't automatically accept an update. You should update manually yourself in your own good time and do it regularly. But don't automatically assume that, you know, things are what they purport to be, because cybercrime, for example, is the biggest area of crime on the planet. And we really got to wake up to that, if nothing else. You know, and then beyond that, you've got the law enforcement and National Security Agency with their miserably suspicious minds.
Yeah, great points. Wow, man, this has been a great show. I really love this talk. That pretty much does it for us. Thanks for doing it. I know a whole lot of people aren't talking about this yet, so it's a real pleasure. I mean, if anybody wants to dive deeper, Conrad's Deep Web Kindle book has clickable links to a lot of great programs and anonymous communication tools and a ton of more info. Would you like to give them any other information before we go?
Well, yeah, I just want to say, you know, I am not a technically minded person. You know, if you know, just this basic things like trying to make the VCR work, not that I have one anymore, I couldn't make those things work. I have kept this book so super simple. We've tested various products on various people, free products, you know, techniques, tools, whatever, on various friends and other people. And anything that people found too confusing to set up, we have just dumped from the book. So everything is super straightforward. 99% of it is free. You can choose to pay for some of the stuff because we recommend it, because we know it to be really good. But generally speaking, it is very simple. Anybody, if you can send an email, if you can access Facebook, you can take on board any of these tools and tips and technologies and make them work for you and operate in such a way that you've basically given yourself back the freedom that the internet promised us in the first place.
Great point, man. Is there any way people can keep up with your writing, maybe future writings?
Well, one thing I do recommend, if you do buy the book, we update regularly because, you know, techniques change. This is a constantly changing game of cat and mouse. If you buy the book, register, and we will send you free updates whenever we bring them out. Do have a blog, but we're not keeping it up to sort of, I don't know, as regularly as I used to, because there's so many other activities going on at the moment now. But no, I just register for the book and we'll keep you updated with all sorts of information as we learn it. And quite frankly, a vast amount of my time is spent exploring new products and reading endless security blogs from various people who we know to be good. So basically, it's a huge distillation of everything that's going on put into this one book, Deep Web Secrecy and Security.
Right on, man. Well, that does it then. Very empowering, very interesting information. Thanks again. Take care of yourself, Conrad.
Greg, thank you so much for having me, and stay safe.
I'll try. All right, people, Conrad Jaeger, tons of information, a very important THC, I would say, and maybe even more so in the coming 10, 20 years. So thanks, everyone. Please donate to the Money Bomb to keep the good THC times rolling. Please share the show and help it grow. Find me on Facebook or Twitter. And now I have a little app that allows listeners to leave a voice message right on the website. It would be great to hear some weird stories or theories from the people. So think about that. Until next time, I'll be on that deep web. Your move, Zuckerberg. I can't stand. Yeah!
Listen.